It's playoff season, everybody. I'm Dan Abern. He's Kyle Devitt. Welcome to the In the Crease podcast. Kyle, Saturday ruled, and it was an awesome 4 days of lacrosse as we saw conference championships go down. Pumped to say the NCAA tournament is here. It's tournament time, Kyle.
Yes, Dan, it is time to see who can put up and who should shut up. Hopefully we are the former and not the latter, though many would obviously disagree. We got through the regular season together. Now we go and get to walk the same road to the championship. Champagne for my real friends and real pain for my sham friends. Let's preview these matchups.
Yes, get it up. We have a great slate of first round games. We're going to go in chronological order. Great game to start the weekend, Kyle. Syracuse at Loyola at Ridley Athletic Complex, 12 p.m. Saturday. What's your take on this one?
Did you read that correctly? Did it not say at Dome or?
Oh,
it's
not Sunday night at like 7:30.
It's not.
Ooh.
No. I'm
confused.
It's not. Yeah. At the Dome though. In all seriousness, how mad are Cuse fans they didn't get to host a game? Twitter was like on fire with angry Cuse fans. I enjoyed it. Honestly, scale of annoyed waiting in the line for Starbucks to furious to having to pay for your car after being told it was under warranty at the dealership. What scale are you at if you're a Cuse fan? Like, where are you there?
Well, if they are mad, they're not letting it known on the internet. They're kind of, they probably,
oh, no, they are.
They probably go on to the group chat just like, we always get this game. We always get this game, guys.
I just think they're not looking in the right places because they are upset.
I would have put a body artifice on the line that Syracuse got a home game in the last game on Sunday night. I would have cut off my right pinky, but I'm saving it for
that's an appendage.
All right, appendage. Okay. Cool. this is definitely the matchup of the first round for me. It's the game I'm most excited about. So it's kind of nuts that it's the first game of the weekend. I do think it's a fairly tough draw for Loyola, though. This Syracuse team puts up points, and their defense can be really disruptive when they're on. Obviously, should be an interesting matchup if we see Nick Mellon go up against Pat Spencer. They could change up the matchup and put Bomberry on Spencer, do the physical versus physical thing. I think if you're Loyola, though, you have to have a lot of things go right in order to beat this Syracuse team. You have to win the faceoffs. Your defense has to step up. You're going to need Jacob Stover to get his routine 15 saves. You're going to need Lindley and Scanlon to get their usual outputs, too. But I stand by what I said a few podcasts ago. I think Pat Spencer is a high-caliber enough player to carry this Loyola team to a victory over anybody. However, his output over the past month or so has been very feast or famine.
So I've been throwing this stat out to anyone that will listen about Loyola. The only two teams that averaged more saves per game in 2019 were St. Bonaventure and Harvard. Think about that for a second. That means you not only need Stover to make 14 to 15 saves, you count on him for those saves. For me, like, too many things have to go right for Loyola to win this game. And so few of those things that need to go right have gone right for them in the past month. If I'm a Greyhound fan, I'm worried about going to the track for one last race.
The funny thing is that I think people think that after that North Carolina loss in the 4-5 game that Syracuse has seemingly lost their momentum. And I'm like, I don't see it. This team, ever since they lost to Colgate, has been consistently pretty good. Like, they lost overtime at home to Virginia. They finally went on the road and they kind of had an out of character performance against Notre Dame. But otherwise, like, it's a team that has been pretty consistent, I feel like, which is something you could not say maybe about the past two seasons, where it's like, oh, like, one game we look great and then the next one we just completely flop. We completely revert form. I think this Syracuse team is going to come in fired up. This should obviously be a great game, and I'm hoping the game of the first round. Another great matchup right afterwards, Georgetown at Yale, 2:30 p.m. Saturday. Kyle, I think people are crazy if they don't see Georgetown as equally likely to win this game as Yale. The Hoyas have been slept on, and I would say disrespected all season, and it was no surprise to me that they beat Denver in the Big East tournament by 3 goals. Jake Caraway is 6th in the nation in points. They have a dangerous three-headed scoring monster in him, Lucas Wittenberg and Daniel Beccaro. Defense has great individual talent. Obviously, face-offs are going to be a huge factor here. Georgetown as a team faces off at only 48%, going up against one of the best to ever do it in TD Ireland. I think if the Hoyas can get quality goaltending, and they did from Chris Brandow in the Big East Championship against Denver, and they find a way to even the possession margin, I think they have a shot to beat Yale here.
Yeah. You know, feel free to call me crazy. Dan, who has Georgetown beaten? They have lost to every top 20 team they've played this year. How do they win if TD Ireland wins 80% of his draws? They're not going to win the ground ball battle with Yale. They will play great defense against Yale as long as they hold their slides and protect the crease. But the Hoyas can't score if they don't have the ball. The Bulldogs also eliminate easy transition goals by tracking back better than, I would say, almost any team in the NCAA. And G-Town loves to score those goals. So for me, you know, I just think this is not a great matchup for G-Town. I think it's better for Yale. So I don't see it. I'm sure other people do. And Georgetown fans, like, feel free to get angry with me. The styles don't match here in your favor. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, that is definitely fair. Like, Georgetown has lost to most of the top 20 teams they played. Their best wins are probably is Denver in that Big East Championship. You know, they did play Loyola tough, but that kind of felt like a weird performance from Loyola. But I look at the 6-on-6 offensive set, Georgetown's offense, going against Yale's defense, and I feel like they'll be able to find holes in that Yale defense, because I feel like it's a similar matchup to what Yale just saw against Penn, where you have a lot of, you know, physical mismatches, guys who can dodge down the alley, attack from X, stuff like that. A lot of different things you have to game plan for. But you're right, if they don't have the ball, it's going to be a struggle to score. It's going to be a struggle to win. Kyle, next game is Army at Penn, 5 p.m. Saturday.
You know, a defensive team that relies on teams to take horrible frustration shots and overcarry to win, going up against one of the most high-powered offenses in college lacrosse. Defense might win you championships, but this is not the championship. This is the first round of the playoffs. You need to score over 10 goals to win, and if you run with Penn, you'd better be able to do that and double it to keep up. I don't know if Army can score more than 15 goals. Or actually, that's optimistic. I don't know if they can score over 12. And if you can't score over 12, you can't beat Penn. That's just how I see it.
Yeah, a part of me really likes Army because the seniors that they have, especially A.J. Barreto and Johnny Surdick, who have made this Army defensive unit really impeccable. I thought what they did by winning 3 games in 6 days in the Patriot League tournament, including that great win over Loyola, really impressive. But this Penn team is really, really good. They kind of remind me of Brown in 2016, except a little less fast. Ooh. Between the boxes, and not as potent on offense. Like, Brown was dropping like absurd numbers, but I look at that, the way that their offense is kind of built, they can run. They have guys who can fly between the boxes. They have one guy who can initiate most of the offense, and Brown 2016 was Malloy. I think this year it's Sam Hanley. And then they have the complementary goal scorers like Adam Goldner, man, 50 plus goals on the season. That's outstanding. And, you know, they have matchup problems everywhere on offense, capable on-ball defenders, goalie with the potential to change a game, and perhaps most importantly, Kyle Gallagher at the faceoff X, who was so good against Yale that they had to bench TD Ireland to throw another look at him. Kyle, faceoff transfer makes impact in Ivy League title game, but there's a plot twist. I think faceoffs and defense could be a difference here against Army, who are one of the worst faceoff teams in the country, winning draws at about 34% on the season.
I mean, who's Army's best offensive player? Easy answer.
Brendan Nickturn.
But tell the people. Right. What's Brendan Nickturn?
Quarterback attackman.
And a freshman.
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about putting all that pressure on him to deliver a 6-7-8 point game to get a win here, because that's what they need. And I'm sorry. I don't see it.
And Penn is like, to be fair, that they have these great offensive players who are freshmen like Hanley. And then you have BJ Farrar, who's great in the middle of the field. But that defensive unit is anchored by veterans and guys who've been through that program for 2, 3, 4 years. And it is a tall task to ask of Brendan Nichtern to go into that kind of situation and perform as consistently well as he has.
Yeah, and we don't know if Barreto's still hurt from the Patriot League game. So,
very good point. Would not even have thought about that. Kyle, to finish off Saturday, we have Robert Morris at Virginia, 7:30. What do you think of this one?
NCAA committee, why you got to do Bobby Moe like this? They put everything they had into winning the NEC, and now they have to play a, I would say, fairly well-rested team in Virginia. And the Hoos have reinvented themselves as a gritty and grimy ground ball group in the last few weeks. Say that three times fast. We know the Cavs can score, but did we know they were mean? They were straight up committing misdemeanors in the ACC championship game. RMU's best chance here is to have UVA underestimate them, I think. But do you think that'll happen? Is the ACC title still like dancing like the sugar plum fairy in the Cavalier heads? Because I seem to recall the last, 5 years when everyone chirped the Cavs for not even winning an ACC game for what? What was the streak?
It was a good portion of 3 to 4 years.
Yeah. So how much is that going to offset them? I don't know if that's really a concern here, but I think Robert Morris has to hope that it is for them to have, a realistic shot of getting past Virginia, just based solely on Virginia's offense. Honestly, I think that's just unassailable because the transition is going to happen and it's going to happen for both teams. But I think that Virginia is just so much better at executing in that circumstance.
Yeah, it's hard to see Virginia not dropping a gaudy goal total here and getting past Robert Morris. I think the Cavaliers showed us a lot against Notre Dame in that ACC final, particularly on defense. Like, kind of unheard of to think that they would only let up 4 goals. It's just like a team that is like a sieve for goal scoring. They obviously have the offense, like you said, but if they face off well and they get a good contribution in cage, which they have at points this season, I don't see why this team can't be playing in Philadelphia. They will have a very interesting matchup against Towson or Maryland in that quarterfinal, however, if they get past Robert Morris.
Right.
All right, Kyle, going to Sunday, we have the winner of Marist and UMBC playing at Penn State, 12 p.m. Sunday. For some reason, I like UMBC in this play-in game, but going up against Penn State is a very, very, very tall task.
Dan, I think we need to have a talk about loyalty because UMBC are your guys. You have to ride with your guys. Have you not watched any Fast and Furious movies?
No.
I told you
on the podcast last year.
That was a rhetorical question.
I've not seen a single Fast and Furious movie.
Oh my, who are you? All right, so look, put it in perspective. If UMass or Vermont were in this tourney, I would ride or die for them because I know what I'd be getting because I've followed them and I have a good relationship with the coaches and I really like how they play. But you also know this UMBC team. You did a story on their defense, the Killer Bees. And here's what I want you to do, though. Give me the betting odds on UMBC against Penn State. What's like the odds of a UMBC repeat of the 2018 basketball upset against Virginia?
When you put it in that kind of context, you actually kind of feel like UMBC might get this. They might pull this off. They'll be like
right?
the first.
Right? See, that's what I'm talking about. Let's go.
I mean, UMBC, this is a team that I did a story on in the preseason. And, their defense had a really great year last year. And, talking to those guys in the preseason, they really wanted to prove themselves this coming season. And just life threw a bunch of stuff at them. Two of their starting defenders on defense pretty much missed the whole season. I think this is a team that's, you know, kind of turning the corner on their health at the, you know, perfect time of the season. Really kind of like, I wouldn't say a miracle run, but just really kind of a Cinderella kind of run to win that America East Championship. And they won some really gutsy games. And I think that they have proved themselves with that conference championship victory. I feel like it would be like a 20-1 odd for them to beat Penn State, though.
I was going to say 60. So I feel like my job's done because you've convinced yourself to bring it to 20. But let's go with that. Let's go with that. What's our next game?
A very, very, very juicy matchup, Kyle. Maryland at Towson, 2:30 p.m. Sunday. I love this matchup. My school versus my hometown, Kyle. Crowd hopefully will be raucous. It is Mother's Day, however. So with Towson, you know what the proven commodities are. Alex Woodall, who's expected to play, but health is certainly questionable. At the faceoff X, you've got an outstanding short stick defensive middie in Zach Goodrich. Towson's offense has been a bit better over the past month or so. I wonder if they can get the points to beat a Maryland team that always seems to have their act together around this time of year. I could see this game going super defensive, a shootout, or somewhere in between. I think this is going to be a fun one, though.
Ah, yes. The battle of tough guy, bad haircut Maryland versus khaki shorts, C student Maryland. My God, Dan, how could I miss this? I will say that betting against the Terps is probably ill-advised, even though they've lost their two very high-profile games against rivals Johns Hopkins. But that being said, you know, I watched and wrote up the CAA title that Towson won. I was really impressed with how Kobe Smith played. And, you know, I'm a blue-collar guy, so Towson's going to be my pick here.
Oh, let's talk about Maryland coming into this game, because I felt like going into that first matchup against Johns Hopkins, there was a lot of confidence around this team. And then they go and they have these two kind of like cataclysmic collapses in the first one, it was in the middle of the game. And in the second one, it was in the second half. And it was just like almost unprecedented to see this Maryland team just kind of fall so flat as they did. Kind of at a loss for what really happened. What did you see?
I mean, did you say coming into the game or crawling? Because I feel like they're crawling into this game, like dragging themselves into this game, given the way that they have played. I mean,
they technically, I think they're the last team.
I think we had some people expecting them maybe to be left out. I thought that was a little crazy. They had too many wins, and too many quality wins, but you know, there were people that were like, High Point should be in over Maryland.
Cornell.
Like, no, it's not how it works. I think Woodall is the X factor here. If he plays and is 100% healthy, which I think they've been holding him out, he was seen on the sidelines of the CAA semis jogging and he was warming up and stuff. So it's not like he's in a boot or in a sling or anything like that. Like, he's well rested and listen, faceoff guys get real dinged up, more so than I think people understand, that had never played the position before. Like, this is, everything is a battle now. You know, it's a lot of bruises on your wrists and shoulder injuries, and you know, you're banging heads with the guy across from you. It's a arduous ask to have faceoff guys play every single game and take almost every single draw. And that's why guys like Baptiste and Irlen are so great, right? They manage to get through it, even though clearly they're injured. I mean, if you look at the legs of those guys, they always have like bandages somewhere, because guys are diving and slashing at the ball, trying to get it when they pop it out. So yeah, I have a lot of respect for the work rate there, but I think if Woodall is in play, the advantage definitely goes to Maryland. But Towson is well-equipped to handle, you know, Maryland 6, I think. I think as long as you stop Maryland from making those long sweeps, you're doing a good job. And I think that Towson has the personnel to do that.
Yeah, that was the question I was going to ask you, is that do you feel like this Towson defense matches up well against Maryland's offense, where you're probably going to have Kobe Smith going against Jared Bernhardt or Logan Wisnowskis.
Right.
And then you have Zach Goodrich, who I think is a capable enough defender to take out like those sweeps that you said. He's going to be able to, you know, kind of put his stick on Bubba Fairman and Russell Massey and Kyle Long and all these guys that are really quick, really athletic, and just kind of want to get these big, long dodges going. Do you think that's the case?
Right. Well, what Maryland's really good at is hitting after the slide. They're great at hitting the slide, man. And I think that Towson is ready for that. That Towson's going to crowd the crease. They're not going to give, you know, Wisnowskis his, you know, his trademark kind of backdoor. Like, how do you lose a guy that big? I don't know, but teams certainly have all season. But his ability to get behind his defender and finish, I think, is kind of something that Towson's going to be game planning for, and also game planning for a way to slow down Bernhardt, because I don't think you can fully stop him. And it's funny you mentioned Bubba. I don't know if you're putting Kobe Smith on Bernhardt, I don't know if Goodrich by himself is going to be enough against Fairman. I think that he's very good. But at the end of the day, he's still a shorty. So yeah. He needs support. And also, like, I don't think you want a shorty, no matter who they are, on the best, you know, physical dodger for the other team. So that's definitely something to watch.
Yeah. And I think at the other end of the field, there is the possibility that the physical nature of Towson's offense could find and exploit some holes in Maryland's defense. And that's why I think this is going to be, you know, I think, you know, on paper, you might look at this as like, oh, Maryland's going to roll in here and take care of Towson. But I, if you've watched these two teams, like, I feel like that's not the case. I feel like this is a much more even game than it lets on.
People that think that are wrong.
People forget. That's Kyle, let's go to 5 p.m. Sunday.
People forget.
5 p.m. Sunday, Richmond at Duke. I know Kyle likes the Spiders here. For me, it's hard not to see the Duke offense getting to double digits and the defense stifling the Spiders here. This is a rematch of an 11-7 Duke victory in the pouring rain, where Richmond did hold their own for about three quarters, but ultimately Blue Devils got the victory. What do you make of it?
You're right. I do like Richmond here. The one knock I have in them is that they tend, this season in particular, but also years past, they tend to play up and play down to their opposition. But this year, I think Richmond has some great goal scorers. They're normally known as a defensive team, but they got Ryan Lanchberry and Teddy Hatfield, who combined to score 86 goals and dish 53 assists. Duke is still Duke and has the self-belief in themselves to both rack up goals early and come back from a deficit. Richmond doesn't have that quality, so they need to control the action and the tempo if they want to win. And I'm going to go cliche time here, because I think this applies here more than any other game. The first team to 10 goals is going to win.
Actually, that feels like a fair thing to say. I think both you and me kind of expect this one to be a little bit on the slower side, very micromanaged.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's how it's going to pan out. And I think that, you know, whoever wins, it'll probably be by less than four goals. Would you agree?
I would agree, yes.
All right, let's go to the final game of the weekend. A really great one, in my opinion. Johns Hopkins at Notre Dame. Another great matchup. Hopkins looks like a brand new team after back-to-back wins over Maryland and the narrow loss to Penn State in the Big Ten Championship, where they pretty much left everything on the field. Hopkins has been a much better team ever since they realized Joey Epstein was their best player. Also, Cole Williams is playing his best lacrosse of the season at the moment. He's been, you know, criticized here and there for kind of going cold in a few games. They've also been pretty good at the faceoff X, and the defense certainly looks better than it was. Notre Dame offense with Brian Costabile and Brennan Gleason did not fare well in the ACC title game against Virginia. Specialist play has shown to be strong at times for Notre Dame. And I know one variable in play right now is Ryder Garnsey possibly coming back for this team for the playoffs. That's something to stay tuned to. Keep your ear to the ground. We might have an update. coming on that soon, but this is an interesting matchup because I feel like Hopkins' offense looks rejuvenated, while this kind of like that ACC title game seemed very out of character for Notre Dame, especially since they had a whole week to prepare.
I mean, the out of character thing for Notre Dame in that game is they got beat up, and they're the team that's usually beating people up. I will say that if the Garnsey thing happens, I feel like it flies in the face of everything that program has been about for a decade, but I that's just my opinion. You can disagree with me all you want, but I am working on an article about what that would mean for Notre Dame if it did happen, that might be out later this week, depending on what we hear. Obviously Hopkins is the hotter hand here, but what do we say about picking close games? Cause this is pretty close as far as matchups go. What are the two rules? What's the tiebreaker?
Best player, best goalie.
Who has the best player?
Hopkins.
Question. Yes, Hopkins and Joey Epstein.
Oh,
although
okay,
I'm going to make the same point I made about Nick Turner with Army freshman. So he's been doing great. He's come on even stronger than you know the previous times we talked about him on this podcast. But I've been actually welcomed in to the bandwagon. The Epstein bandwagon. I'm kind of nestled in the bosom of the bandwagon right now. I snuck in. I was wearing some Sperry's and carrying a skateboard, wearing a dad hat. Just said, "How do you do, fellow kids?" And they let me in. But here's a better question. Who is the best goalie? Because I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know either. You know, Notre Dame is kind of flip-flop between Zullo and Schmidt. Hopkins has stuck with Ryan Darby, but, you know, it was only two games ago that he only had two saves against Maryland. It was a win, but it was only two saves. Right. So,
right. I do feel, though, like this isn't quote-unquote goalie game where either one of those guys is going to decide the outcome.
Yes.
That's just
But I think thought. There is a potential. There's a potential there. But I would say it's more so from Notre Dame. All right, Kyle, time to move towards our much anticipated Weird Watch of the Week. I've got great news. I have seen Avengers Endgame, and the spoiler ban has been lifted by the Russo brothers.
No, you warn the people. Be fair.
I know. I'm still, disclaimer, we're going to be talking about Avengers Endgame spoilers in depth starting now. So if you don't want to hear spoilers or don't want to hear nerdy talk, please fast forward to the end of the podcast. Kyle, I loved it. It's actually hard to believe how good it was, considering how many character storylines they brought to a satisfying conclusion. It makes the whole of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the build-up to this final film as about as impressive a cinematic achievement as you'll find. It was awesome. I didn't think it was too funny, as some criticized. I actually thought, like, the Hulk thing was friggin' hilarious. Dad bod Thor, funny. I thought the final battle scene and the on your left and Avengers Assemble, just so amazing. Like, I haven't been to the movies where, like, people are, like, cheering and clapping and, like, getting up out of their seats and, like, fist pumping and, like, punching the air. I'm like, good God. So much fan service done right and in a tasteful way. I can understand now why you cried from sheer moments of awesomeness.
Yeah, the on your left just put me down. I was like in the seat. I got a tear running down my face. And then he said Avengers Assemble. I was like, there's lots of tears. I was like, but it was because I was so happy. And I've said this many times. I, as a kid, never thought I would see this. I never thought I would see it. I never thought it'd be done correctly. I had my vision for what these characters are from reading the comics and all that stuff. And somehow they stuck it. And I want to say that the biggest problem in pop culture analysis right now, aside from everyone being too literal with their criticism, like grow up, learn how to read some symbolism, is that Endgame is still going to be in the public consciousness when Game of Thrones ends in a couple weeks, and it's going to make the ending of Game of Thrones look bad. But I'm telling you right now, I know we're transitioning into the Thrones mode. We're still talking about Endgame, but here's what you got to do with Thrones. Temper your expectations, because no matter what they do, it's not going to be as good as Endgame. And I said that to you pre-pod, and I'm saying it on the pod. Bring the expectations for the end of Game of Thrones down, because they're not going to do it like Endgame did. They're not going to do it. It's so hard to end things. It really is. Unless you have a plan from the beginning, it's so hard to end things.
Yeah. I just couldn't believe that they brought, obviously, Iron Man. Very sad that he died, but it just kind of felt like there was no other way to end his arc than to give it all for the Avengers, right? Yeah.
Right.
And then
it's been foreshadowed since his
and then like Captain America. Yes. First of all, I knew he was going to stay in the past. I was like, you sly dog. I knew it. And then to see old Cap and to give his shield to his buddy. Very touching. And then he finally got his dance. Very, very great callback, actually.
Yeah.
Very underrated.
So I want to talk about one thing about that, because everyone's complaining about why didn't he give it to Bucky? Bucky knew that he was going to do that. I think that, like, if you watch the scene, you see that, like, Bucky's like, go talk to him, because he knows. Also, Bucky's a murderer. He's not going to be like Captain America. He's been working for, like, a secret, like, Nazi organization for 50 years murdering people. They're not going to give him the shield. It's not going to work that way.
It's like, who do we give the shield to? Guy who's like a very qualified Air Force veteran, or the guy who was like a Soviet assassin for like 30 years and they put him in ice? You go with the Air Force veteran. just such a great movie. Oh, man.
Yeah, I think the other moment I want to talk about one more moment, and then I'll let you finish. Cap picking up the hammer is unbelievable, but the thing that makes it like tier worthy is that he uses it better than Thor does. He's like using it with the shield, knocking it into Thanos's face, smashing it, bringing down the lightning. And like his attacks are coordinated, and you see like what he can do with a weapon, because Cap doesn't have a weapon except for the shield for like most of his cinematic journey. Right. And then you see him actually wield a weapon of power and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, awesome. That's the soldier coming out. That was awesome.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. That was great. It makes me wish the Russo brothers would write Game of Thrones. Speaking of, let's transition into Thrones Watch of the Week.
And wow.
Oof, Kyle. So like you mentioned, tempering your expectations. I'm finally starting to have the startling feeling that the showrunners are going to botch this season, which in the end likely botches the show. I thought the first two seasons of this, the first two episodes of this season were great. Build up episodes, yes, but great.
Yeah.
The Battle of Winterfell was highly enjoyable, but had its well-deserved criticisms. This episode, episode 4 of season 8, had a strong first half, then began to unravel and blew a huge lead in the second. Some of the worst writing and pacing the show has ever seen. So many contrived plot conveniences. And Kyle, I have my list of grievances right here. First.
Yep.
Number one, we aren't going to get resolution about the Night King and the White Walkers, are we?
Nope. I told you that. You didn't believe me. I told you.
They have been painted as an absolute evil and taken away, a la Snoke style in The Last Jedi. It was literally the same thing. That destroys so much narrative work done over 8 seasons. Like, go back and watch episode 1. that first scene where the Night's Watch guys get ambushed by the White Walkers, and you realize this is the driving force of this entire story. And for them to kind of just be like, oh yeah, they were just, you know, machines that, yeah, we kind of made some bad things and now they want to kill everybody. And I'm like, the show has never been that black and white. Everybody has a motive. Everybody has like a gray area. And just be like, oh yeah, they're just like ice machines that want to end humanity. It was like, well, you have all these great lore moments throughout the show. Obviously, I still think we could get resolution there. We'll see, but my hopes are incredibly low at this point. Gripe number two, what is the point of Bran now besides being an exposition device? I keep hoping they have great things in store for him, but nothing keeps happening.
No.
I live in the past now. He has the stupidest one-liners ever the past two episodes. He was built up for several seasons, and the payoff has been just to reveal stuff about the past and to bait the Night King. Great. It's just almost as it's like, all right, okay, he's served his purpose. What do we do now? I feel like he has to have some sort of hand in the way things go over the next two episodes. Gripe number three.
No, wait. Let me give you my pitch on Bran real quick. Bran is just the narrator at the end, and everyone else is dead. Or like it's a flash forward and so many people are dead, and he like tells this like story exposition, just like the end of Dune. Watch. You'll see. You haven't watched Dune. I know you haven't, but the real sci-fi heads will get that reference.
Gotcha. Final gripe, number three. I'm sorry, but the killing of the dragon was just silly. Just not believable. With the ballista on the boats.
Why?
And
Wait. Why?
Well, first of all, it's we're talking about a show.
That's why it's believable. That's the whole point. That's why it didn't work when they could see the arrows.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you, it
just didn't work. It just didn't work for me. I mean, yeah, I was shocked
that CG that looked good in the entire episode. I'll give it that.
That's
the rest of CG was terrible.
But you know, with the ballista, I know this show's got dragons and zombies in it, but like the human forces are still grounded in like science for the most part. And like, these weapons should not exist where they have like near unbeatable accuracy and they have enough force to like pierce a dragon. Also, they absolutely ace the first volley of shots, go like 4 for 4 on the dragon, and then get zero hits with a full barrage with the dragon coming right at them.
Yeah, I'm putting that down to like tactics though. Now we're doing tactics right. We surprise attacked you and killed your dragon when you weren't looking. And now when you're looking, oh, the dragon can dodge it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Speaking of surprise attacks, Euron is a cartoon bad guy.
Yes.
It's just like, I see the dragon get killed and I'm like, if it's Euron, I'm going to be so freaking mad. And there he is. He's like, ha ha ha. I hid behind a rock and he's like twirling his mustache. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. He's like, ha ha. I put these things on the boats. Who's laughing now? Also, if ballistas are lining the walls of King's Landing acting as an anti-air defense, why not just have Daenerys flame them at night when it would be difficult to see and track you?
Yeah.
Oh, Kyle, that's a plot hole.
I mean, maybe they could do that. I don't know. Maybe they pay people to stay up.
I feel like the writers are acting as if the plot itself has plot armor.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean,
I could go on forever.
Again, temper your expectations. And then if they actually do something satisfying, you'll be happy. This is the problem that everyone had with Lost. Because Lost was so good for like two seasons, then it was terrible, and then they brought it back with a twist, and everyone was excited for the final season, and they went, let's do something metaphysical. And you're like, wait, what? No. But it's actually a rich text if you go back and rewatch it. I don't have the patience for it because I was mad just like everyone else with how that show ended. But I also know that I had the expectations too high to get too many answers. Don't expect answers here. You know what I mean? Like, just don't. Like, you'll have resolutions, but you won't have answers. And just bring it down. You got to bring down the expectations because they're not going to stick it. I'm just going to be real with you. They're not going to do it.
Yeah,
the writing's not on the wall.
I'm losing confidence that given the time left in the next two episodes, they can't bring this in for a landing. Not in the way they, it deserves to be brought in. And I'm going to be personally devastated when it happens. I'm going to try to temper my expectations, but I'm going to just be like looking there and I'll be like, they did it again. They freaking How I Met Your Mothered us.
Oh, don't. You know not to bring that up with me. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Man. Gonna be really mad. Damn.
What if Danny is Ted the whole time? Sorry.
Sorry. I can't do it now, man.
No. Oh.
Also, like, the best part about this season kind of going bad is that, like, two or three podcasts back, you said that you knew that the showrunners were going to land this, that the books couldn't. And I'm like,
well, no. So I thought that they would, I didn't know they were going to do this thing with the Night King. That was, pardon my language, that's complete how that landed out. I know it's great that Arya got her hero moment, but, like, whoa, dude, that's bad. I thought they were going to repel them and then follow them or something like that and have a huge end of it all. But now we're like cutting Missandei's head off and being like, hey, this is bad. Now Danny's angry. Oh, she's been angry the whole series. What are you doing? Don't double down on her being crazy because she's Targaryen. We all know.
Yeah, she mad.
We all know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But big mad.
People on the internet are like, oh, I was so out on the books and now I'm all the way back in. I'm like, dude, the books aren't getting written. All right, Kyle.
We've been out of the books for like
dive rule debate. Let's move on.
Yeah, we've been out of the books for like three seasons though, so like people the book people gotta chill out.
Yeah. Dive rule debate. Do you have anything for me this week?
Yeah, listen, fam, we told you so. We kept telling you, you didn't listen. Now we're all here waiting to see what's going to happen. One shot, one moment for this rule to be everything it ever wanted. Prepare to actually lose yourself as this rule ruins a game this weekend. That's my prediction.
Oh, how do you feel about this that? You think it's going to happen this weekend?
Now, yes, it's going to happen. Watch.
Gotcha.
Watch. Right. I mean, a lot of people think that the Pat Spencer 2-minute unreleasable ruined that, and it already happened. But I think something worse is on the books for the horizon. Yeah, it's coming.
All right, Kyle, time to move to our final segment then, the Talker Dordovic Play of the Week. Mm-hmm. And Kyle, I think we're both in agreement here of what the Play of the Week is. Because when I saw it, I was leaning back on the couch. And when it happened, I was like completely upright. I was like, I can't believe that just happened on a lacrosse field. And it is Brown in transition.
Yep.
With a cross crease, one-handed like dunk by Luke McCaleb. And I was so blown away by how unlikely that was to happen. And that we just saw it happen. Just incredible. How does that happen?
Well, also, the best part about the goal is the lead up to the goal because it looks like a completely botched clear, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Goss throws the ball Gilman style over the middle, gets knocked down, looks like it's going to get taken away. They finally recover it. It's a two pass into the guy on the low wing, and then he hits the cross crease, and you're like, that's not going in. As he's passing it, I was like, what are you doing?
Bad pass.
But then just grabs it one hand in flight, jumps past the goal to catch it, dunks it, and lands behind the cage. It was incredible. I'm going to go with goal of the season.
Yeah, I was like, this is a top four goal to ever be scored this season. That is crazy. I can't believe it happened.
Like, we got to name it. What do you want to name it?
I don't know. The Brown one-handed cross crease miracle. The miracle transition play. Should I set it to Titanic music?
No, because then you'll get banned from Twitter.
True. True, true, true.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's call it let's call it the Bucky finish, because he's got one arm. No?
All right.
Is that cool?
The Bucky finish.
The Bucky goal. We'll call it the Bucky goal. Done.
All right, cool. I know that is our play of the week, hands down, but I also got to give a shout-out to Foster Cuomo. Importantly, doing his one-handed, high-velocity underhand shot on good television, not some kind of like potato stream. Last time he did it was on kind of like a potato stream. Here he did it on national television, and it looked amazing. Really impressive skill right there. Got to think that he is going to be a top five NLL draft pick.
We call that the Gary Gate or the junior goal, depending on your age and consumption. Okay. But yeah, that's definitely a nice little trick there. Gary Gate was really good at it.
Yeah.
He would like, cause he was so big, he would just like lean over and then whoop, come out of nowhere. And you wouldn't even know he's shooting and the ball's in the back of the net.
Yeah. All right, Kyle. Well, that is our show. Are you going to any of these games this weekend?
I don't know.
Because I tell you
what, I got to do the D2.
It's going to be a good weekend in Maryland.
Yeah, I bet it is. I have to do the D2, D3 podcast next. So I assume that I will know where I'm going after that. But as of right now, I do not know.
Gotcha.
So good luck to everybody. I'm excited to see, you know, how this all shakes out. I mean, we are in the end game and someone's going to be a champion. And can't wait to see who it's going to be. It's been a great season. Thanks for following along with us. I'm going to intro us out because I'm already doing it. You can follow me on Twitter at @TheKyleDevitt. Dan, where can they find you?
You can find me @Dan_Abern on Twitter. Guys, enjoy the first round. We'll see you afterwards. Peace.